Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We know the narrative with Georgia by now. A lot of Georgia fans are kind of tired of it, but it is what it is. Georgia has been close, oh so close, the last couple of years of breaking through that big barrier, not just getting past Alabama, but actually winning the national championship. Georgia has been really the best of the teams not to do that, right? And that's a narrative that at this point in time, Georgia fans have grown a little weary of. But as I said before, it just sort of is what it is. And then in the lead up and the build up to the 2019 season, there's going to be a lot of diagnosing going on of why was it that Georgia almost broke through in 2017 and won the national championship, but did not? And why was it that Georgia almost got past Alabama in December of 2018 in the SEC championship? Who knows what would have happened in the college football playoff beyond that? But once again, the place that had been the stopping point for Georgia a year ago became the stopping point again for 2018. And the media is going to try to put its detective hat on to figure out what that's all about and why that's going on. And I do believe, and maybe some of you will feel differently about this when I lay all of it out, but I do believe that the media, for the most part, gets this wrong, especially when it comes to the big flagship of media, which is ESPN. And their early look at what Georgia is going to be like this spring and ultimately what it's going to be like on the field once the 2019 season begins. I feel like that ESPN is almost guilty, a little danger and a little bit of danger of going down the wrong road in describing why Georgia has come up just short in 2017 and 2018. Let me give you an example of what has been said, and then we'll kind of figure out what the real truth actually is. Now, this is not something I'm necessarily mad about. I don't think it's something to be all that critical of. I just think it's an interesting conversation starter for those of us who care about Georgia football. ESPN.com has its pre-spring preview up for the Georgia Bulldogs. Alex Scarborough is the writer, and one of the sentences that caught my attention was this one from Scarborough, who says about Georgia, there might be a, listen to this phrase, mental hurdle left for this program to clear, but there's nothing in the way of a talent gap. Despite significant changes to the roster and the coaching staff, the Bulldogs are expected to be right back in title contention next season. Well, we would all agree with that last sentiment. Certainly the Georgia is right in the thick of the national championship conversation for 2019. But it's the beginning parts of what Scarborough writes that I think there's some interest in. He says, no problem with the talent, but there might be a bit of a mental hurdle. And if people want to kind of prescribe Georgia as having had a mental hurdle against Alabama the last couple of seasons, I just think that's getting it wrong. And ultimately, this is going to end up being, I think, good news for Georgia. But the idea that Georgia is somehow dealing with the mental, the yips, the, you know, believing in itself, can't quite get over that final hurdle, Alabama's in Georgia's head, which is a phrase that you hear thrown around a lot, I just don't necessarily think that's true. Now, to be clear, there is a mental aspect of playing a game like Alabama, and Kirby Smart's acknowledged that before. In fact, let me go back in time before the national championship game at the end of the 2017 season in January of 2018. I mean, the one thing that Kirby acknowledged going into that game was there is at least some mental aspect of this, of how you want to feel when it's all said and done. You want to make sure that you've done everything you can in terms of your focus and preparation. He wouldn't deny that, nor would I. In fact, here's Kirby Smart talking about that very point.
What keeps you up a little extra long at night, knowing that opportunity is right in front of you and how precious it is?
Well, I think just that, you don't know, you don't appreciate, especially for a guy that was at Alabama so long, sometimes you can lose the appreciation for what it takes. And, you know, you can't take it for granted. You don't know when your next opportunity is coming, when the right mixture happens. It takes a lot of things to fall in place. Certainly, we want to build for the long haul and build for that success, but we want to have no regrets about this game.
Now, it's easy to look at what happened to Georgia in that game and at the end of the 2017 season when Tua Tagovailoa threw the touchdown pass to Devontae Smith in overtime and say, oh, Georgia had the lead, let it slip away. That's a game in which you have some regrets. And then to have something similar happen in the 2018 game back in December when Tua Tagovailoa leaves the game because of an injury. Jalen Hurts comes in. Now it's he who orchestrates the comeback. I think it's easy to look at that game and say, oh, if you're Georgia, you must have some regrets. And yeah, I guess in terms of the fact that a lead slipped away, then that kind of fits into that narrative. But it's not like Georgia's up by 50 points in either one of these games. It's only a couple touchdowns. Teams come back from a couple touchdown deficits all the time. It just seems more significant when it happens to Georgia versus Alabama in a national championship game or an SEC championship game. I'm not making light of what occurred. I think the thing that you want to point to, though, if you're Georgia, is building up to a point in which you don't have to be quite so perfect to beat Alabama. If you look at the way that Georgia's played in the last two first halves against Alabama, you would suggest, well, the Dogs have played pretty close to perfect. But you want to get to a point where I think the talent level grows to the point where the margin of error is not quite so slim playing in a game like this. And I guess the ultimate takeaway when you look at where Georgia's been in comparison to Alabama is that the message that Kirby gave after the 2017 game is the same message that you give after the 2018 game. It doesn't ring quite as true when the same thing happens 2 years in a row, but the overall truth of the message isn't lessened at all. Kirby said before that there's a permanence to what Georgia's building when it comes to the comparison between Alabama, and that still echoes, I think, even today. In fact, here is Kirby after that national championship game from 2017.
You know, I can't say enough about the remarkable senior class. These two young men sitting next to me, they meant more to Georgia than yards. A lot of heart and soul, a lot of fire. Sonny Michel came over and talked to the group several times during the game, inspired those guys. But in overtime, we didn't finish when we had to, and Alabama did. And to give them credit, but I think everybody can see that Georgia's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I'm very proud of this team and this university, and we're not going anywhere.
We're not going anywhere. That's what Kirby Smart said after the 2017 game, a force to be reckoned with. He believed they were building, and as I said on a previous podcast a couple of months ago, it doesn't sound quite as good to say after another loss to Alabama, from Kirby Smart's perspective, we're still not going anywhere, but I don't believe the overall message is any less true. I still don't believe that Georgia's going anywhere, nor should I think Georgia fans believe that, nor do I think that Georgia coaches or players feel any differently. They still feel like they are building something along the way that's going to get past the Alabama Crimson Tide, and it's not about some mental barrier to being able to do it. So you may ask then, well, what does it eventually become about? What is the story of what Georgia's going to need to do to finally overtake Alabama? It's actually the exact opposite of the way that Alex Scarborough describes it in my mind. Scarborough says there might be a mental hurdle, but there's nothing in the way of a talent gap. I think if you ask Kirby Smart in his, you know, most honest moment to describe what he thinks is happening between Georgia and Alabama, ever so slowly with each recruiting class, Georgia is adding the kind of talent that ultimately will close the talent gap. That as much four and five star talent as Georgia's collected over the course of the last, four recruiting cycles, heading to Kirby's fifth recruiting cycle in 2020, Alabama has recruited at such a level for such a long time that equaling Alabama from a talent standpoint is still a really difficult thing to do. In fact, even in 2019, Georgia's going to be really, really close to being as talented as Alabama, but from an overall composite standpoint, the Crimson Tide are probably going to have still a handful more blue chip former four and five star prospects on the roster, and that's the issue that Georgia continues to combat when it takes on Alabama head to head. In fact, if you want to go back to the past one more time with Kirby Smart, he's acknowledged that. Getting ready for games against Alabama, looking at old film of Alabama, even for a guy like Kirby Smart, who lived through these teams as its own defensive coordinator, he still marvels at just how much talent was in place there in Tuscaloosa. For some perspective, here's more from Kirby.
I watched a clip of today, LSU versus Alabama. We were doing a drill called Get the Ball Back, and we showed our team trying to stop them. There were eight first-rounders lined up on the defense. Is that where we want to be? Are we there? No. But obviously, we want to get there.
So Kirby Smart back in 2017 says, are we there where Alabama is in terms of that total number of draft picks on defense? No, but we want to get there. When you fast forward now to late February of 2019, I would think it's easy to say that Georgia's a lot closer to being there now than it was when Kirby Smart said that. And the heartbreaking losses that Georgia suffered to Alabama in the last couple of seasons don't change the overall trajectory of the direction in which Georgia's growing. Growing towards the kind of program that, from a talent standpoint, really is on par with Alabama, and there should be no reason to doubt when these two programs go head-to-head from the standpoint of a Georgia fan, despite the fact that Georgia's lost the last couple of games. And you know what? Even Nick Saban himself has noticed this, because when he's been quizzed before by the ESPN folks, I mean, he said he expects to see these kinds of Georgia-Alabama battles to happen many times in the years to come. Here's Nick Saban.
I know what they're doing and how they're doing it. They're going to be successful for a long time.
Look, so let me wrap this entire conversation up. I go on Alabama radio shows from time to time, and I get asked a question of some version like this. B.A., when Georgia comes this close to Alabama the last couple of years and doesn't win that game, is there any fear on the part of fans that if you couldn't get over the hump in 2017, you couldn't get over the hump in 2018? Is there any fear on the part of Georgia fans that Georgia may never get over the hump? And my honest answer back to that is no, it shouldn't be. I don't think that scarcity is something that Georgia has to worry about when it comes to its battle with Alabama. If anything, the scarcity here is on the other side. It's Nick Saban who is, as I've said before, is getting into the winter of his career. It's him who gets a little bit older every single day. It's him who has to retool and overhaul his coaching staff now two consecutive off seasons. If anything, the Georgia plan that's been put in place is very much on the schedule that Kirby Smart had it designed to be, bringing in more and more elite talent every single year. I can't tell you when the breakthrough for Georgia is going to occur against Alabama, but I can say with some confidence that I don't believe there's any kind of mental barrier that's keeping this from happening. I think Georgia's adding to its talent every single year. 2019's another example of that, and maybe, just maybe, this will be the year that the breakthrough finally does occur for the Dogs. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thank you so much for being with us live on video today, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube. We're also available on the Dog Nation Twitter feed. We're on the radio at noon as well. We love being with our friends in the Classic City on 960 The Ref each and every day. We are also available as a podcast. If you're normally a video listener and you want a great on-demand way to catch up with the program if you ever miss an episode, subscribe to the podcast in the Apple Podcast Player. We think that's a really good way to catch up with Dog Nation Daily. We'd love to have you do that there. We also post the show each and every day on the worldfamousdognation.com. It is a Tuesday. That means for us, coming up in a couple of minutes, we'll get some recruiting talk coming up with Jeff Sintel. Before we do that, though, I do want to go around the doghouse today, presented by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa in beautiful Towns County, Georgia. And I want to backtrack on something we talked about a little bit yesterday. I addressed yesterday what I thought were the five toughest games for Georgia on its 2019 schedule. And there was a clear theme that I had in mind for ranking the games that I ranked, but I also invited some comments about this as well. And I heard some great stuff on our comment section on video yesterday. We do our R.S. Andrews cool down at the end of each show, and we had some great discussion on this. I knew I'd get some great Twitter responses, and I got some of those as well at Dog Nation Daily. In fact, Scott Barman weighed in on this at the Dog Nation Daily on the Dog Nation Daily Twitter feed. And in fact, here's what Scott said. He said, "Hey, Dog Nation Daily, in terms of the toughest game for Georgia in 2019, he says, I think it's going to be Tennessee and Knoxville the week after the Notre Dame game. Kirby will have to work to prevent a letdown." Now, some people accurately pointed out to both Scott and me that don't forget there is that bye week before the Tennessee game this year. But I think that Scott's overall point is still an interesting one, that there's going to be so much hype and interest in just general focus on that Notre Dame game. What happens after that, kind of getting back up for the rest of the schedule run, will be a little bit of a challenge for UGA, and I think that Scott's not incorrect for pointing that out. Another thing that I got some pushback on from some of you, both in terms of Facebook comments, Twitter mentions, things of that nature, is the fact that I was putting too much emphasis on Georgia going on the road in 2019. I mentioned the Auburn game up near the top of that list, the Tennessee game up near the top of that list, because they were true road games for Georgia. And this is an area in which we've seen Georgia struggle in the past. Some of you said, I'm making too much of that. But listen, the nightmare that was Georgia and Jordan-Hare Stadium in Auburn in 2017, that still hangs over my head a bit. I mean, if anything, Kirby Smart tried to send the warning out to Georgia before that game, but the results ultimately ended up being what they were. In fact, here is what Kirby tried to tell Georgia fans and his team before going into a really tough road environment in Jordan-Hare Stadium that day. Here's Kirby Smart.
Well, it's the same challenge as it is at most SEC places. It's just a little bit louder. And they got a good team. I mean, the better the team is, the tougher the place to play is. And their fans get loud, get rowdy. They're there pregame to the end. And there have been some really loud moments playing in that stadium. And I don't expect it to be any different Saturday.
That was an unfortunately prophetic statement from Kirby Smart going into that 2017 game against Auburn, because that day Georgia did not seem to respond well to the road atmosphere it faced. And what was weird, almost a carbon copy of that, was October of 2018. Despite the fact there were about 20,000 Georgia fans in Baton Rouge against LSU, once again Kirby Smart sent out the warning pregame of be careful with this hostile crowd, but nonetheless, it still ended up being a big factor in the game. Here's Kirby from last October.
I mean, every environment in the SEC is incredible, but this is one of the best in the country. It always is. Their fan base cares so much. They tailgate. I mean, they're the center attraction of the show, you know, and played there as a player, coached there a lot of times, and it's a great program, great atmosphere. I mean, they're loud, their fans are passionate, and they're physical. They got a good program.
So if you missed the conversation from yesterday's program, I'll invite you to check that out. Our most recent episode of Dog Nation Daily, where I rank my five toughest games, and I am going to have those true road tests, given the fact that Georgia didn't get it done last year at LSU or didn't get it done at Auburn in 2017. Those games where Georgia goes on the road expecting to face a hostile crowd here in 2019, those are going to be important games for me to see how much Georgia is growing as Kirby Smart moves into what I guess will be year four here in 2019. I'm eager to see that, and that's why I'm going to rank those games where I do. I'd love to have you continue to weigh in either in our video comment section now or on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily as a part of Around the Doghouse presented today by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. And speaking of Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, what a great time to check that out. If you're watching on video, you see some of the images from that beautiful resort there in Towns County, Georgia, the rolling hills, the mountains, the trees. Maybe I have a little bit of spring fever, but watching this video today really makes me eager to kind of get away and be at a place like this. And there's no better place for you to go this time of year than Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. You can find them on the web at brasstownvalley.com. You can find out about special offers they have going on or just some of the amenities that make Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa such a great getaway. It's only 2 hours from Atlanta, but when you get there, I say this from time to time, and it really is true. When you get there, you kind of feel like you're a world away just because of how nestled in and tucked in it is in those beautiful mountains. So please check out Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. It's great to have them as a part of Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily. All right, coming up later on, ESPN also said something else that was pretty interesting about Georgia yesterday, and I want to get into that in terms of how that might impact Georgia in the 2019 season. But for now, a lot on recruiting, everything going on with the build-up to the kind of the heart of the 2020 recruiting cycle. Jeff Sintel's got a lot on that. We'll welcome him into the program right now, and it's great to have you with us as well.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Happy Tuesday to you, Jeff Sintel. Thanks for being with us on the Marlowe's Tavern Tell All. We do love getting a chance to get some of your inside info about Georgia recruiting. And speaking of inside stuff, if you want to become a Marlowe's insider, the best way to do that is text the word Marlowe's to that's M-A-R-L-O-W-S, M-A-R-L-O-W-S, to 24242. And you can become a Marlowe's Tavern insider today. Jeff Sintel, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, Brandon, man. Good morning, guys. This is maybe getting to be starting the time of year where I don't know if our DogNation.com readers would like to see seven or eight stories on recruiting up every day on the site, but I guess we could sure try.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about some of the stuff you've got coming up because you've got some really interesting stuff either already up at DogNation.com or set to come in the kind of hours and days ahead. I want to do some of that with us today as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. But let me start, though, with something that you and I talked about off the air a little bit yesterday. And I think sometimes we see stories kind of pop up, and a lot of this, you know, in this day and age happens through social media. And I think it's important to give some context for that. For instance, Jamil Burrows is, I believe, one of the centerpieces of Georgia's 2020 class, a terrific defensive line prospect, a guy who I believe is all dog, and yet over the course of the weekend there was a tweet from Burrows that got some attention. I think for those watching on video we can show this. He goes on an LSU visit, was very complimentary of the visit, describes it as one of the best that he's been on, and yeah, there it is on the screen. He says, one of the best visits I've taken so far. That's Jamil Burrows with the sort of signature LSU gear and symbols behind him. Jeff, help us make sense of something like this, because obviously visits are just a part of life for a program like Georgia when it wants to compete for the top recruits. They are not going to shut it down and not take visits. So help us contextualize what it means for what we believe a rock-solid UGA commit enjoying his time at a place like LSU and kind of what all of this means.
Hey, Brandon, let's have fun with this. First of all, you know, there's the easy way to say this is, you know, it's sort of like recruit has a visit to an SEC program, enjoys visits, tweets out complimentary things about the visit. I mean, there's some semblance of that to this story, of course. But I mean, the thing that Georgia fans are gonna probably think about here was not the OMG crazy purple emoji face here, but Jameel Burrows is one of those cornerstone recruits for Georgia, strongly committed to Georgia. Things can change with young people all the time, but he, to me, seems like one of those bedrock cornerstone commitments for Georgia, especially when Georgia's going to turn over what looks to me to be like 10 defensive linemen over the next 2 years, where Jameel Burrows is not only having dream school, home state school, in-state school, but the path to playing time for a national championship contender is all there. So all that stuff you got to think about, the need for the class, but also where Jameel Burrows rates as a true cornerstone commitment for the class. Now, it's interesting, my friend. Like, I know I like to have fun with you. What Georgia does with a lot of these recruits is they say, hey, man, go see the world. Go see everything else out there. Go see everything, compare it to Georgia, and we want to get a shot to make sure that you still like us the best, and you come back home after those visits and compare us. They do that with their recruits, even the elite recruits. Right? And I know if you were the head coach or the lead recruiter at the University of Georgia, I don't know if you'd be telling guys to go visit Clemson and go visit Florida. But that's the way Georgia operates, even with a priority position for the 2020 class.
Well, you mentioned Clemson. I feel like I am honest enough to admit that as a fan, if you gave me the choice of Georgia doing things the way that it does or being a fan of a program like Clemson that does things the way that it does. And listen, Clemson's method is working. It's won the most recent national championship. It's been a fixture in the college football playoff. But this thing where, hey, Clemson commits, don't take other visits, but Clemson also doesn't host a guy on a visit unless he's, you know, uncommitted from a program, that's not full contact enough for me. I mean, I do want to play in this kind of ruthless, cutthroat, hey, let's try to steal everybody else's recruits and let's try to, you know, feel confident enough that no one's going to steal the ones that Georgia really wants to keep. I mean, I'm wired in such a way that the really aggressive, full combat, you know, hand-to-hand method of Georgia recruiting is preferable to me than the kind of touchy-feely, everybody let's haul hug and kumbaya Clemson recruiting. I wouldn't like being a Clemson fan knowing that other people around me were just being more aggressive than me. Right or wrong, I'm kind of wired to be more of a fan of Georgia's pursuits than I am a program like Clemson's pursuits, who is a lot less aggressive. Still getting elite players, but they just go about it in a lot less aggressive way. That way is kind of not for me, Jeff. I don't mind telling you the truth about that.
Well, I guess let's put the proper hues of purple and orange to this. With Clemson, Dabo Sweeney and his staff, they do like to have their guys figured out by summer. They like to have their commitments made by summer, especially the end of the summer, especially the end of their camping cycle. And then everything that takes place out of that is they will welcome commitments from other schools to work out or to come by on unofficials. But then, especially once the season gets underway and things get really, really meaty, They won't welcome official visits from prospects that are committed elsewhere. If prospects that are committed elsewhere want to take an official visit to Clemson, that's great. The first thing they got to do is make a public decommitment from their school. And the other thing is if one of Clemson's commitments wants to go take an official visit and go check out another school, that's fine as well. Dabo leaves the doors wide open. They just have to decommit first from Clemson. That's the way Clemson does it. There's a lot of kumbaya. There's a lot of water slides to that. And I guess everything else that goes with horseshoes and bowling with the Clemson program, which is a fantastic program that is winning at a level that even Georgia fans would probably not get overindulged on for quite a few years. So credit to Dabo. Definitely works. Definitely takes a little bit less of the intrigue or maybe wet nursing out of the recruits during the balance of that very rigorous ACC season. Air quotes, and when they're trying to win championships.
It is Jeff Sintel as part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all here on Dog Nation Daily. Don't forget, just in the same way that Jeff gives us inside info in UGA recruiting, you can become an insider at Marlowe's yourself by texting the word Marlowe's. That's M-A-R-L-O-W-S to 24242. That's the number, 24242. Marlowe's is the word. You can find out about special offers and big events happening in the tavern right there in your neighborhood. Jeff, let me switch gears here for a moment. I saw on Twitter where Mikael Sherman, the five-star linebacker from that D.C. area, an important part of the Georgia recruiting cycle here for 2020. I guess it's also celebrating a birthday today. So I guess happy birthday to Mikael Sherman, who turned 17. And I can't help but notice, Jeff, that every time we do our top targets for the 2020 class as a part of Before the Hedges each and every Wednesday. You're always really, really keen on making sure that Sherman gets a lot of attention in those top targets lists for Georgia. So on the event of his birthday, would you mind kind of giving us an update on Sherman and kind of how you view him and how he fits into the overall puzzle for Georgia here in 2020?
Sure. First of all, he's named to the opening as a junior. Everybody that follows our coverage on Dog Nation, they know about the opening, and they know about guys that get invited to the Nike opening a cycle in advance of their senior season, when mostly there's 166 of the nation's top recruits that all compete together at a Nike event with lots of gear and lots of swag. And usually they only save about six spots for underclassmen. Very rare to see sophomores there. Owen Papo is the only one of those. Juniors like Jamari Salyer and Nolan Smith also made the trip on their way to Georgia. Brian Brzee was another guy that was a junior participant in the opening last year. Cale Sherman, 6'3", about 220, recovering from a season-ending knee injury as a junior. Let me tell you, Sherman, the thing that will make you, let me just say, the tantalizing thoughts here about Cale Sherman is 6'3", 230, can play inside or outside, kind of like Quay Walker a little bit. He is a guy, though, when Nike had their fastest man competition, and listen, that's normally receivers, all-purpose backs, scat backs, maybe even a rare quarterback or something like that. Mecale Sherman was not only in that thing, he clocked the fastest time of any linebacker at the Nike opening fastest man competition. He made one of the final heats. He clocked a 4.52, 4.53 on the laser at that speed, which is moving down the road. Let me say that one more time. And he's a guy that we've seen the Twitter video of him recently. He's already bouncing back strong from that knee injury. And he's a guy, we wrote about this last week, that DMV fishing hole for Georgia in 2020. He's one of several stellar elite recruits that do have Georgia on their mind. And one of these days we'll get around to sharing that story about Mecale Sherman and that conversation he had with Todd Gurley at a camp about Georgia. Very interesting story that I think Georgia has definitely been very high up there for Sherman for quite a long while now. And then everybody saw the tweet recently where he applauded the hire of Dan Lanning as defensive coordinator for Georgia. And Dan Lanning has been his vigilant recruiter trying to entice him to come down and visit Georgia, check out Georgia. For over 14 months now.
Now, you know, we're still really, really early in this 2020 cycle, Jeff, but use word like tantalizing. When you start mentioning, hey, connection with Todd Gurley, kind of a favorable conversation these two have had in the past, Sherman being impressed with the Dan Lanning hire, that's only going to tantalize a lot of folks when it comes to Mecale Sherman. You know what you've done here. You've kind of fanned the flames a little bit.
Hey, one more. He's going to visit Georgia this weekend as well. I don't know if they'll have a late birthday party for him or anything else like that, but I bet there will be some pictures of him in Georgia gear as well. Sherman's just a really strong player. One of those guys, and you sit there and go, gee willikers, man, good gosh almighty Joe Friday. How in the world can Georgia get another outside linebacker to come into the fold with the Nolan Smiths, the Jermaine Johnsons, the Ojulari's of the world? But that's what this recruiting staff does.
On an unofficial visit, can they give him the official visit-style cookie cake in honor of his birthday? I mean, surely that's not an NCAA violation to give a young man a birthday cake, is it? Surely not.
Oh, man, it's another example. I mean, you're going to see this young man, and he just turned 17, man. 6'3", 230, looks like he could be on a college campus right now doing power cleans, being in one of those Attack the Day snippet videos that Georgia sends out on Twitter. We rank him in the top eight or nine targets for Georgia in the 2020 class, not just because he's a five-star, not just because he would check a need, a very small need these days at outside linebacker for Georgia. But Mecale Sherman is just the guy that Georgia has been building a relationship with. I mean, really, essentially, since Dan Lanning came on staff, he's been bird-dogging that guy up in the D.C. area along with Demon Clowney and everything else like that. And this is a great way Georgia's worked. Everybody sometimes wonders if Kirby Smart is being tactical enough or if he's thinking two or three steps ahead with his strategery. Well, when it comes to recruiting, getting Lanning on all these hot 2020 guys when he eventually ascends to be the defensive coordinator in waiting at the University of Georgia, and now he is the defensive coordinator at the University of Georgia, pretty well played.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Hey, you've got a piece up at DogNation.com right now that I want to talk about for a minute. It's the five-star offensive tackle in the class of 2020, Broderick Jones, a UGA commit, and he's got some good news for Georgia fans. I don't want to give the whole thing away because I want people to read it at DogNation.com, but I do believe this is a pretty important piece of news for Georgia as you start really looking ahead to the future, and it's not too early to start doing this. Give us some of the story here on Jones and how this kind of fits into the on-field story for the Dogs 2020 and beyond.
So, Brandon, here's what you'll like about this one, kind of like that shrimp and crab nacho plate you and I both love at Marlowe's, man. But here's what's happening here with Jones. Obviously, this is going to check some bells for you, check some boxes for you as well. I mean, with those green emoji checks. He's currently the only five-star commitment for Georgia in the class. That's rare that we can say that these days. He's the number 20 overall prospect in the country. And, of course, if anybody follows their NFL draft mocks or whatever, you would realize that the names Andrew Thomas and Isaiah Wilson, those guys are going to be on draft boards or those mock draft boards all this fall, especially Andrew Thomas, man. He seemed like he's been trending to the NFL since he started all 15 games as a freshman during that Rose Bowl season in 2017. And what's going to happen there? Broderick becomes very important for the class. I mean, he's the type of guy that it's weird how this works, Brandon. It's almost like that drop-dead, stunning, gorgeous young lady in high school that nobody wants to talk to her, that nobody wants to try and ask her out because she seems untouchable. And this is what we did last week, I think, or a couple weeks ago on Before the Edges, where some of these five-star commitments on Georgia's board, like Trayvon Walker, George Pickens, Nolan Smith, they end up with right around 15 offers because no one really tries to go all in with a five-star against all the other schools that are already really well deep into the recruitment. I think Nolan Smith only ended up with 10 published offers. I think George Pickens had 16. And what's happening here with Broderick Jones is really, to use a phrase that I know a lot of people, a lot of the hip folks that listen to us every day like to say, is not a lot of schools, man, are shooting a shot right now on Broderick Jones, man. It's really just there's Georgia, Auburn and Gus Malzahn, man, they're sure trying. Yeah. Tennessee is making a push as well. But really, that's about it for a guy. You look at him, Brandon, 6'6", and maybe a quarter inch now. He continues to grow. He's in the middle of his state basketball run from Lithonia High School at 291, 292 pounds. Dude looks like he's 275, carries that weight so well. He's a starter on a Class 5A basketball team. Man, I don't know how many boxes we can check on Broderick Jones that are not already checked, but a lot of good things. And that story, the story that's up on DogNation.com right now, kind of shows how Broderick Jones is doing everything he can to get himself in position. Should an Isaiah Wilson go to the NFL and should Andrew Thomas go to the NFL and maybe there's only like a proven veteran tackle like Cade Mays at the program right now at Georgia, Broderick Jones is going to get himself into position to vie for playing time for that 2020 season.
Yeah, that's a really important story to think about. It's not too early to start thinking about that because of the way, as you said, Georgia could lose offensive tackles in the season to come. That's a really, really important thing to keep your eye on. It's a great piece up right now at DogNation.com. Jeff, something else, we'll finish up with this for today. We could do a lot more, but we'll just finish with this. Something else that you've got coming at DogNation.com as well, and this is a timely conversation coming off the heels of a visit for Mitchell Mays, the four-star offensive lineman from North Carolina, who was recently on campus there at Georgia, kind of getting the red carpet treatment, as you might imagine. Sam Pittman loves giving that out. We've become very accustomed to seeing these photos of offensive linemen smiling while standing next to Sam Pittman. Mays, I guess, becomes the latest on that. It sounds like you've got a preview coming on Mays, and this is one of those names that Georgia fans probably will spend a good bit of time getting to know in the weeks to come, it sounds like.
Okay, Brandon, stop me if you've heard this before. One other thing to add on Broderick, which we'll add to this conversation we're about to have on Mitchell Mays, is Broderick is at the point now where I think the coaches are probably going to start asking him to start talking to guys and building the class, kind of being one of those
good
Pied Piper that, you know, Brandon likes to hear about those Pied Pipers. And I think five-star Pied Pipers can toot the University of Georgia horn very loudly. when it comes to a future and a playing future at the University of Georgia. I know a lot of fans would like to see Broderick Jones and Tate Ratledge show up in this class, in the 2020 class. But another name here, to stay on subject here and on book, is Mitchell Mays. And stop me if you haven't heard this one before, Brandon, but this might be Sam Pittman in Georgia going against Clemson again for another big guy.
Amazing.
Mitchell Mays is a top 50 player, number 3 overall offensive tackle at the University of Georgia. And let me tell you this, and let me tell you this very slowly, for any maybe Georgia Tech fans or any other fans of the rival fan bases that are listening to this. Mitchell Mays looks older than I think about 85% of the Georgia roster and maybe several graduate assistants.
Wow.
He's just 16, and he will be 17 on September the 30th. People call him Unc. They call him Uncle Mitch because he is a huge guy. There's a lot to like about Mitchell Mays. He's already very fond of Georgia. He took a trip to Georgia over the weekend. He already knows when he'll be back. We'll write about when he'll be back at Georgia for his next visit upon the heels of this already successful visit. Out of North Carolina, Clemson really likes him a lot, and it will be very interesting because this is a guy. You get on the Dog Nation forum, you already know a couple things about the offensive line class for Georgia. You know that Georgia wants to get at least two tackles. Broderick Jones is one of those dudes right there. And then they want to look for more of those Swiss Army knife players. We use that a lot and say that a lot about a lot of positions at Georgia, the defensive backfield, the secondary, the offensive line fits there too, because I think this staff has grown enamored of what they saw out of Cade Mays last year. A guy that could play tackle, a guy that could play guard, a guy that can kind of plug and play with the rigors of the SEC at a high level when the attrition comes across the offensive line. And I think they look at Mitchell Mays and they see another player that can do all those things.
That's a really interesting thing to bring up, Jeff, and I'm glad to have that as part of our conversation here. We'll look forward to reading a lot more from you on that at DogNation.com. Of course, the Centel Intel pieces and everything else there. A lot of really good recruiting stuff coming down the pipe here very soon. Thanks for being with us as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Tell-All today. Jeff, before we let you go, I'll remind folks to become a Marlowe's Insider by texting the word Marlowe's, no apostrophe, just M-A-R-L-O-W-S, to 24242. That is the number to know there. And you can find out about big events and special offers happening at the tavern right there in your neighborhood. Jeff, I'll also look forward to seeing you tomorrow afternoon for Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, starting at 3 p.m. And it sounds like it's going to be a very spirited show, just given everything else that's going on with the UGA recruiting right now.
Hey, man. Brandon, Marlowe's is known for that quality, great, five-star chef-inspired food. And I'll return you to keep cooking up another great show.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate that.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff from Jeff Centel. And I think what he says there at the end about Cade Mays is really pretty fascinating. I think I'm going to do some more on that before we're done here today, because there is an issue in which the Jeff Centel has been kind of ringing the bell on, maybe more so than anybody else. And I think he's right about this. I don't think any of us pay enough attention to this, but I'll do more of that later on in our program. For now, though, I want to give full time for our SEC Through, because there's actually a couple pretty interesting stories going on around the SEC right now. Let me start where I don't always go, and that's basketball. So Tennessee loses to LSU. LSU's got a good team, but Tennessee lost and wasn't too happy about it. There's even been some research done about one of the officials in the game calling way more fouls than the other officials involved and calling way more of those at the expense of Tennessee. Well, come to find out, we learn more about this guy. Clay Travis on Twitter tweeted this out. This has also been shared by a couple of the websites as well, including CBSSports.com. So Anthony Jordan's the guy's name. This is the official in question who was very aggressive in terms of calling fouls against Tennessee in the game this past Saturday. And he had a Facebook post. I believe this has since been deleted, but the screen grab is out there on the internet forever. And it's Anthony Jordan on Facebook saying, strolling through D-Town Granada, doing a little sightseeing, and look what I saw. To all my Bamas, go Tigers, with the customary spelling, G-A-U-X. And he's holding up the LSU t-shirt. Now, it don't take much around the SEC, and this is an example of that, of a referee who was already a little bit controversial for the way that he called the game, to then be seen photographed holding up the LSU shirt. A lot of Tennessee fans feel like the official was on the take. And I got to tell you, This is a really, really bad look for the SEC. In a weird way, this is more harmful, I believe, than I know there was that kind of reemergence of the Tim Donaghy, the scandal in the NBA, but the referee who was allegedly fixing games from a gambling standpoint. In the SEC, having a official who was also a fan, I think is a bigger deal and potentially more harmful to the SEC's credibility than the stuff going on with the alleged gambling kind of stuff. I think this is the kind of thing that the SEC has got to be very careful about, because there are no shortage of fan bases that get upset about certain things that happen in a game. And for the most part, we see this even with like the Rams-Saints thing that happened the other day, where there was an egregious miscall. The Saints fans were very upset about it. But time and time again, no matter how upset a fan base gets about a call that goes against them, the sports fans outside that fan base don't really care. And the assumption always is, I know you think you were jobbed, but you really weren't, you know, officiating. These people are human, you know, on blah, blah, blah. But when you're a human, you're also, I guess, prone to have a team that you cheer for. You're prone to have a life outside of officiating. When that creeps into the world of being what might be an LSU fan here, I think this is a potential bad, bad look for the SEC. They got to do something about this. I don't quite know. As the saying goes, it's not paranoia if they really are out to get you. In the case of Tennessee fans here, maybe this guy really was out to get them. This is something for the SEC to be very careful about, I believe. Speaking of being careful, Auburn might want to be careful with this. Darius Slayton, former Auburn wide receiver, was quoted at AL.com. That's the big website that covers Alabama and Auburn. And while Slayton, for the most part, is complimentary of his time at Auburn and has some love and affection for the program, there's one thing that he says that will be, I think, used against Auburn in the court of public opinion when it comes to negative recruiting. Let me show you the quote here from Darius Slayton about why he's going to the NFL draft, even though he may not be drafted very high. It's about how he was used at Auburn. Slayton says, I think I had a chance to make plays at Auburn, he means, but I definitely think I didn't always get a chance to show my full ability of what I'm capable of doing. That's Darius Slayton being quoted as a part of a special piece at AL.com. Far be it from me to tell Kirby Smart and these other SEC coaches how to go about their business, but for a program like Auburn, who's already on kind of shaky footing, I'm printing this thing up and I'm passing this thing around to any would-be wide receiver. George Pickens already chose Georgia over Auburn, but the next version of George Pickens, the next version of elite receiver considering going to Auburn, the same way that Auburn loses out on Pickens for this class, lost out on Justin Ross for the 2018 class, I think the words of Darius Slayton, even though I don't know that he necessarily means to disparage Auburn, this is going to be used to disparage Auburn. I think it probably should be. That this is a program that is just so intertwined in Malzahn's own mercurial ways of running an offense that it's not developing stars the way that it should at the wide receiver position. Now, Georgia's got its own issues with that. I won't deny that. But so far, you don't have Mecole Hardman or Riley Ridley or Terry Godwin, any of the departed Georgia wide receivers, saying, now, in Godwin's case, his eligibility was done, but you don't have Hardman or Ridley saying, I'm leaving Georgia because they didn't use me effectively, and hopefully they never do, because I don't think that's a particular good look for a program when you get ready to move out of it. A couple of the other SEC stories I want to get to. First of all, I talked yesterday about the recent decommitment from the Florida program. They've had two within like the last week or so. I also saw on some Florida message boards yesterday, Gators fans are not happy about the latest one. Kevon Lee, who's really kind of a running back, you know, he's kind of mentioned either as an athlete or an all-purpose back in some, you know, categories. But this is a guy that, you know, was potentially going to be right there along with DeMarcus Bowman, one of those running back prospects that Florida was really chasing down. There's always a chance, I guess, he gravitates back towards Florida before it's all said and done. But if you like the idea of Gators fans being very nervous right now and very worried and bothered, the Lee decommitment has them feeling that way. And listen, around here, we're Gator haters. We think if Florida's upset, we're happy. And so we're certainly happy about that. And then one final story to get to, and this is kind of in the weeds a little bit, but I wanted to bring it up nonetheless. I don't know what's going on at LSU, but there are more break-ins than LSU football stadium than any other SEC stadium combined. The latest, according to the Baton Rouge Advocate, is that, I guess it's three guys, they're young guys, we don't know if they're LSU students, they break into the LSU locker room, steal one of those John Deere-type vehicles, and drive the thing around campus. I want to say there have been like a half dozen instances of people breaking into Tiger Stadium there in Baton Rouge and just trespassing on the field, and now you got guys breaking in the locker room, stealing a John Deere vehicle. What is it about LSU? Are they not locking the facility? I swear, this only happens in Baton Rouge. It's kind of an amazing situation. Maybe that tells you a little bit about what's going on in the state of Louisiana, too, I guess. Nonetheless, we'll make that your SEC through. All right, here on Dog Nation Daily, I want to get back to what we started the show talking about. We were talking about the ESPN pre-spring preview for the Georgia Bulldogs. And off the top of the program, I address whether or not there might be some sort of mental hurdle for Georgia to get over when it comes to Alabama. I'd love to hear from you on that, your thoughts about the potential mental barrier you think that Georgia might have. You can reach out to me either on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. We'll do our R.S. Andrews cool down after the show on video. You can put your comments in there. You can also comment when we post the podcast at the worldfamousdognation.com. A lot of ways for you to interact. I'd love to hear from you on that. The other thing, though, about the ESPN preview of Georgia that I thought was worth mentioning is how similar the kind of key issue that ESPN identifies is to something we've talked about on this program a lot, and that's the need for the emergence of what they call pass catchers, new receivers to step up. Georgia's losing Riley Ridley. Georgia's losing Mecole Hardman. They're leaving school early. Terry Godwin, as we said, his eligibility is done. Also adding to this, Isaac Nada as well. Georgia needs some new pass-catching threats to emerge. That's going to be a big part of the conversation this spring. But in doing that, I think it's important to remember that while someone like me quickly gravitates towards George Pickens, we talked about Pickens yesterday, him being one of those guys that step up, I'm still a big believer that the former five-star Demetrius Robertson, after being a freshman All-American at Cal, he could also be one of these guys that emerges in a big way in 2019. But if Kirby Smart was here, though, when it comes to this competition for new pass catchers that ESPN highlights and my kind of steadfast belief that it's the elite prospects who are the most likely to emerge, Kirby Smart would say, don't be so quick to assume that it's not necessarily the five-star receivers who are going to be the ones that step up and win in a competition like this. In fact, here's how he said that last summer.
Well, how they came in does not matter to us. That means nothing in that room. Every time you guys print something about receivers, it's about how many five stars are in there. But the guys that are playing best right now in there, none of them had five stars. So we go off performance. I mean, the receiver position is, where do you help the team the most? Can you cover a kick? Can you block somebody? Can you make a play outside on the perimeter that nobody can make? And right now, that has nothing to do with what you were regarded as coming in. So is the culture of competition good? Absolutely. Because maybe those guys that were three stars and four stars have outworked the guys that were five, because none of that makes a decision for us. All we do is say, who's playing well? And right now, the guys that are playing best at receiver were not the highly regarded guys.
And to back that up, on the field this season, we saw that from J.J. Holloman, not a former five-star receiver. We saw that at times from Tyler Simmons, not a former five-star receiver. Those guys stepped up and really did earn playing time when they won that competition. Here's more from Kirby on that subject.
We're going to play the guys that play the best. We're going to play the guys that practice the best. We're going to play the guys that bust their butt and go out there and help the team. And there's a lot of them that are helping on special teams. I'm very pleased with our receiver room, top to bottom. I think they're competing hard. They're playing hard. They're making good plays. And they're really helping on special teams. But as what they came in as, I'm not into that. I'm into the team environment. Can you help our team? And if you can, then I'm going to reward you by helping our team. But not, I can't promise you a number of touches and catches. The goal is to win the game.
So as much as Kirby Smart says that, the names I'm still the most excited about are guys like George Pickens and guys like Demetrius Robertson. I do have big expectations for them this year, but Kirby's words can't be discounted either, because a guy like J.J. Holloman, through hard work and effort, did emerge in 2018. I expect more from him in 2019 as well. The overall bottom line of that discussion is, I think that ESPN's right. When it comes to spring practice storylines, how the competition for wide receivers plays out, I think it'll go a long way towards telling you how good Georgia could be this upcoming season. Pretty fun stuff. Make sure you read that at ESPN.com. And, of course, we've got a long spring preview series running at DogNation.com, too, you're going to want to check out as well. Something else that'll make you happy here. How about the fact that it's now been 850 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs? That's good news. It's our Gator Hater Updater. And don't forget to check out Jeff Sintel's piece on Broderick Jones. Jones is an early enrollee. That could be good news for Georgia in 2020, and it's not too early to start thinking about that. We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.